Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Making a point with very few words.
All right, if you're listening yesterday, you heard Joe Dubuque, good friend of our family, and he was talking about his love for the album Fear of the Dawn by Jack White. We actually went through track by track on side one, and today, that's right, side two. We flipped the record over. We're going to drop the needle on side two and find out just where Joe stands on that, and I hope you enjoy. I'm going to cue up the tape, and here we go, Fear of the Dawn, side two.
Talk about what Dusk is. It's only 30 seconds long, but it's the first thing on the second side.
So Dusk, if I remember correctly, is reinstating the motif that was established in Esophobia. Mm-hmm. And that's really all it does, but it does set the kind of the mood for the B-side as being a little different.
I like that. I think it's cool that he put that there to kind of, especially if you're listening to it on streaming or you're listening to it on a CD, you've got that sort of little short palate cleanser, if you will, that kind of takes you to back to what the rest of the record is going to be.
And especially for with the next song being What's the Trick, that's very much needed.
You say this is your favorite song off the album.
I believe, what's his name?
Coop.
Coop does as well, yeah, and I completely agree with him.
Yeah. And Coop is a big, big Jack White fan. He really is.
Yeah, I mean, you could say the reason I get to do this episode is because he brought it up.
Here you go, Coop.
So thanks for that, man.
Yeah.
But What's the Trick? Yeah, I think it's my favorite song. What I really like about it, it's oddly specific, but the vocal delivery on a certain part, I think it's you could call it intermission, is like, it's just really well done. It's quite minimal, but just his vocal delivery really says a lot about the intent behind the entire song, mm-hmm. even though it's technically one of the quieter parts of the song.
Something sharp inside. Sharp inside. Quit bolting your food. Don't be rude. Plus one and minus one equals zero. That's a defeatist attitude. I'm sick of this. Dead to the world, but not to you, but I'm dead to the world, but not to you.
I love what you said here. Breaks are short enough to build tension without releasing it. That's really cool. Not an easy thing to do. Like you said, it may seem on the surface like it's pretty simple, but there's a lot. It takes a lot of skill to do that.
It does. Yeah.
Some of your favorite guitar riffs are in the song. Me too. They're great guitar riffs. If I could write one guitar riff like that, I would be happy.
You do sometimes, you just forget.
Yeah, that's exactly
I've heard a few.
Yeah, I know. I can never remember them.
Okay, so that was then, this is now.
Sorry, this song is, I'd say it's not the most lighthearted, but it stays lighthearted the longest. Uh-huh. I think the more intense part doesn't come in until about 2 minutes in, and the song's about 3.5 minutes long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't quote me on that. but yeah, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's a break song, but it uses a lot of imagery to kind of, it's really good at theater of the mind, which is kind of gets your mind somewhere else, mm-hmm. and thus is kind of a break from the rest of the album, and then immediately goes back into what the album is doing, which is the more aggressive parts.
Right. What do you mean by theater of the mind?
So there's a part basically about the scene that's set kind of reminds me of, like, you're in an empty house, and he mentions a flashlight, and then it sounds like someone drops something, and then the song gets a bit darker, I guess you could say. And then a different sound is being used when that part of the song plays again. That sounds like someone knocks something over.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Okay, so then we're back into Esophobia, if we're saying that right, a reprise of it. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, so he comes back with this, with an even more complex delay part, might I add. Yeah. And I think this is, out of the two, the one I prefer, but I would say you probably have to listen to the first one first if you're going to listen to this one and get the whole aesthetic of it. I think I would say that maybe he could have chosen another song to return to on this album, but I think because it is the motif of the album, it works.
Yeah.
And towards the end, I remember, I believe there's quite a different rhythmic riff. It might be a different song. He changes the rhythm of it, and that's something I kind of wish he had, like, gone into longer, because it really, like, I really like that part.
Yeah. Interesting to speculate too that, and again, I haven't listened to the new one that just came out yet, but I don't know if, you know, he recorded a whole batch of stuff at Third Man and, you know, didn't necessarily maybe have a record, you know, Fear of the Dawn first and, you know, the new one second, but maybe a theme developed after you started recording the stuff. Like, I don't know, but it's really interesting to me that the reprise takes place in the middle of the second side.
Yeah, I think I could be entirely wrong, but my understanding is that he recorded Fear of the Dawn and Entering Heaven Alive at the same time.
Oh, that makes sense.
So he put all the acoustic songs he normally frequent, like, you know, on his other albums, it'll be hard song, acoustic song, hard.
Yeah.
And then, so now he's writing two albums worth of songs, putting just all the electric songs on one album and all the acoustic songs on another album.
Okay.
And so I'm sure on the new album that this is probably going to be another theme. It might not be touched on as much, but that might be why that's where it is on the album.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I could definitely see that. You could get that sense, yeah, when you're listening to it, yeah. Okay, so then we go into Morning, Noon, and Night.
Yeah. And, so this song, I think, has some of the better lyrics of the album. I don't know. All the lyrics are good, but these ones resonated with me more than a lot of the other ones. And, this actually may have been the song I was talking about during the end of Esophobia with, the guitar riff towards the end.
Right.
But, which, again, I really like. And it also, it was a good transition into the end of the album as well. It kind of it settles down a bit, but not too much for the beginning of Shedding My Velvet.
Shedding My Velvet, I love that song title. And it's interesting. Well, I'll let you talk about it, but I do want to ask you what you say here, kind of the last part of your notes on this song. But it starts off tender, right?
Mm-hmm. It starts out about as tender as any song gets on this album.
Yeah.
And so it takes its time building up to the more intense parts. I'd say probably longer than most of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the lyrics are a bit more sincere, even if I don't fully understand what they mean.
Right. They're definitely, it's definitely very intense, and heartfelt. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm not exactly sure what he might be referring to, but, I like what you're saying. When he builds up to the more intense part of the song, it's pretty brief. And then you say a perfect sunset, or perhaps in this case, a sunrise to end the album. So Fear of the Dawn truly is. That's a great observation to end the record. Yeah. Again, we go back to Fear of the Dawn. We're not sure why he is calling it that. But does it feel like a night? I mean, do you feel like it's a nighttime kind of an album versus something you might listen to during the day when you're working or something like that?
Entering Heaven Alive is probably a daytime album.
Yeah.
And Fear of the Dawn is a nighttime album.
Interesting.
Yeah. Be that, like, in terms of, like, the motifs within the album, or the feel of the album, or just when you would listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't speak too much to Entering Heaven Alive, but from what I've seen and heard, it seems like it's a pretty... not mellow, but as about as mellow as Jack White can get.
Right, right. Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense if indeed they were sort of parallel recordings, you know, or even mixed up, that it would kind of come out that way. It's pretty interesting. So, overall, would you say, let's just take it from an engineer or producer, you know, standpoint, how do you think it, you know, compares to other stuff he's done? Do you feel like it's just as well produced? It's right on par with everything else? And of course, like you said, Boarding House Reach is a little different than other stuff, but I don't know. To me, it's got a very lively, kind of vibrant sound to it.
Yeah. I think, well, first of all, I gotta say, the production is very good while still sounding very Jack White.
Yeah.
Because I can see as a producer how if someone else got this, they might try to clean it up a little too much.
Yeah.
Especially with the tones Jack White prefers. But since Jack White had a lot of say, and I believe he produced most of it himself, the fuzz parts are about as aggressive as they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And everything's a little off, even though it's made in a computer.
Yeah.
And one thing I did notice, I'm not sure if this is just, like, my mind playing tricks on me, but, like... he knows how to make, like, he knows, to me it sounds like he knows what makes track sound good on an album, and what makes a vinyl. What makes a track sound good on a vinyl, and what makes a track sound good on digital.
Okay.
Because they both hit, but slightly differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think I think he understands the difference between vinyl and digital more than a lot of people do.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Or he at least pays more attention to it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And,
you know, like we were saying before we even turned the mics on, as someone who owns a record pressing plant, right, and has those facilities right there at Third Man too, to be able to do that, he would definitely understand that. I don't know. I always feel like he's a vinyl kind of a guy for me anyway, you know.
How much more vinyl kind of guy can you get than owning a record plant?
I know. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
Well, Joe, I got to tell you, this is so interesting. And I'm really glad we did this. Now, do you have the blue vinyl
That's out there, or do you have the black vinyl?
I have the black vinyl, okay. But if someone has the blue vinyl.
Well, I'm just looking here on Discogs that they have the, there's a couple different kinds. There's the midnight blue and the astronomical blue. There's also a white, and there's a mix. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm not such a colored vinyl person. I mean, I'll buy it if that's what I end up getting, or if that's all there is. I think that's cool. And I have a lot of 7 inches that are colored vinyl, but I don't know. I always kind of go for the black vinyl if I'm buying an album.
Yeah, I think for Jack White is the one person I'd make that exception.
Okay.
With the
constant
insistent on color consistency.
Right.
But Jack White has also been quoted as saying black vinyl sounds the best.
That's what I've heard too. And I've heard other people say that too, that you lose a little bit when you're using the colored vinyl. It's just for whatever reason. Yeah. I remember we did a tour of a Furnace record pressing plant over here in Alexandria, and the guy was talking about the differences between black and colored vinyl. He also owned a $47,000 stereo, so that was a different situation as well. All right, Joe, this has been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. Now, I want to give you an assignment if you're willing to do this. Will you listen to the new one, give it a good long listen, and we'll get you and the coupon together, and we'll talk about it. What do you say?
I will do my best.
All right. All right. That's all we can do, right? All right. And we'll see if we can pin the coop down, to do that. So what are you excited about? Are there other groups right now that you're kind of into, or, you know, is there anything you want to like sort of tip people to?
I'm not sure there's anything in the vein of Jack White at the moment that I'm into, but there's definitely a few bands I've found recently that really interested me. There's one band called Elder.
Okay.
And they are, not sure how to describe them. To me, how it comes off is each record is a bit like a certain classic band. Like, one album comes off a bit Foo Fighters, one album comes off a bit Pink Floyd,
cool.
But it's very much more modern. But it has, it doesn't have, like, modern metal vocals. It has kind of something in between David Gilmour and actual metal vocals.
Oh, interesting.
So I really dig a lot of their stuff. I'm going through all of it right now.
Cool.
And then in a completely other direction, I've recently gotten into a Nashville session guitarist called Brent Mason.
Oh, neat.
He works with a lot of people. He's worked with Chet Atkins and a bunch of other people. And it's just kind of interesting to go through his solo albums and kind of see, it's a good way to understand how Nashville session musicians have changed over the years.
Yeah. Because
he's been in the game for so long.
Very interesting. Very cool. Those are great picks. Mark those down, people. This man knows of what he speaks. Joe, I want to thank you very much. Anything else you want to add here at the end?
Am I allowed to plug myself?
Sure.
All right. I am Rocktree01 on Instagram.
Okay.
Rocktry01. And thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. Glad to do it. Yes. And I will we'll follow up with you in a couple of weeks here and see if what your impressions are of the latest one. So that's going to be very interesting as well. Joe Dubuque, thank you very much. Want to thank Andy for having you as his son. That was important. We wouldn't have been able to have this conversation.
Yeah, that was an important part of the process.
Definitely was. Obviously, it's been a lot of fun. And thank you for coming down to the basement. I appreciate that. If anybody out there, Coop, of course, and anyone else wants to weigh in on Fear of the Dawn, you can send us an email, rock@suburbspod.com. You can, the best way to do that is to record a voice file, attach it to your email, and then we can hear your voice on the show, which is always something we love. But you can find us on the social medias at Suburbs Pod. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all those places. And you can always stick your head out the window and yell, and eventually someone will come and see what it is you want, and they'll probably tell us if you're yelling about Suburbs Pod. But we know there's a lot of Jack White fans out there, so we'd love to hear what you guys think of this record and what you think of what's happening with Jack these days. So it would be great. Once again, Joe Dubuque, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, that was an important part of the process.